Welcome to the Recruiting Rant Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez, senior analyst for USCFootball.com, and this is the second Recruiting Rant Podcast we've had in consecutive weeks. We hope to do these weekly, bringing questions from the peristyle here for our premium subscribers. Appreciate you guys. Definitely appreciate your questions, your feedback, and your interaction with this podcast. As predicted, USC obtained the commitment of Colin Mobley last Friday, 6'4", 245-pound defensive end from Hyattsville DeMatha High School in Maryland. Looking forward through the month of May, USC on track to get a commitment almost every week this month. The Trojans are ranked number 5 nationally in the team recruiting rankings by 24/7 Sports, with their lead recruiter being Dante Williams, passing game coordinator and defensive backs coach, right now ranked number 9 among recruiters. Lots of questions to answer from the peristyle this week, so let's get to it. Our first question comes from Beta Trojans 64. He asks, are there any under-the-radar out-of-state recruits that have solid connections to USC? If so, who should we look for? By under-the-radar, I'm not sure if you mean a 3-star prospect that may not be recruited very hard by the other schools in that region, or just a big-time prospect that no one's really talking about that USC has a really good shot at. Up until about a week ago, Aaron Armitage would have been that player, 6'4", 245-pound, strong side defensive end, a 4-star from Blairstown, New Jersey. A week ago, most experts are picking him to go to Stanford. After a flurry of crystal ball predictions this past week, now USC's the lead school. So that's a good example of a very good player, a highly rated prospect, the number 22 rated strong side defensive end nationally, going from being a guy that everybody thought was going to Stanford to now being a player that USC fans should definitely know about. Another player that could be listed in that same category would have been Nathaniel Wiggins, the 6'2", 170-pound athlete slash cornerback out of Atlanta, Georgia, a 4-star who I think this week you're going to see pop up the rankings a lot, probably be a top 24/7 level prospect. And nobody really considered USC a serious contender for Wiggins until we got a tip from a source a few weeks ago and made a couple crystal ball predictions. And now, boom, USC's looked at as the school to beat for Wiggins. So those are two players that I think at one time were off the radar for USC that were good out-of-state players that now you know about. If these kids are too far off the radar, we're not doing a very good job of keeping you guys informed. So on that note, I guess another name that I'll mention is Terrence Ferguson, a 6'5", 220-pound tight end, the number 32nd tight end according to 24/7 Sports. He's a 3-star tight end by 24/7 Sports rankings, but he's a composite rankings 4-star. He's from Littleton, Colorado, and one of the few tight ends that USC is really pursuing. I don't think USC is going to take but one tight end in this class, if they take any, and Terrence Ferguson is really one of only maybe 2-3 guys that USC is actively recruiting right now. So that's another name that you can kind of put in the back of your head as a player that's out of state that I think USC is definitely in pursuit of and somebody that's considering USC seriously. Our next question comes from Down With Disease 92. He asks, how many D-line are you thinking in this class? Mobley and Toya are already quote-unquote in. Foreman and Armitage are trending with JT Toimoloau warming up would be 5 at max. I could definitely see USC signing 4 to 5 defensive linemen in the 2021 class. I think it's going to depend on how you want to categorize Corey Foreman, the 6'5", 265-pound 5-star defensive end from Corona Centennial. Foreman could definitely play that edge rusher hybrid outside linebacker position. In Todd Orlando's scheme, it's called the B-backer spot. In a lot of other tight fronts, they call it the Jack linebacker. That spot is predominantly filled by high school defensive ends. It's not a spot where you see kids that are playing linebacker in high school playing that spot in college. It's usually a bigger, stronger player because that spot, you're going to have to pass rush against offensive tackles. And you're going to have some long arms and you're going to have the weight and the strength to be able to disengage those blocks from 6'6", 6'7", 300-pound offensive linemen. So that's not a spot where you see a bunch of smaller linebackers grow into being Jack linebackers or B linebackers. It's really more defensive ends that learn to be able to play in space, play a little bit in the curl, play a little bit in the flat, and just do a little bit of coverage. But again, predominantly, it's a pass rushing spot, and you've got to have a really good pass rusher. And I think Corey Foreman actually fits that spot pretty well, probably even better than Drake Jackson, who we hear might get a run at that spot a little bit in fall camp. So we'll see how that develops. We'll see what happens with Drake Jackson. But I think if Drake Jackson ends up moving back to defensive line and puts his hand on the ground, then it's going to be all speed ahead trying to get Corey Foreman for that spot. The next question comes from LGT Third. I know that's not how you say that, but that's how I'm going to read it. Who asks, what are the current negative recruiting narratives you are hearing on the recruiting trail regarding USC these days? Is it the same old Helton is gone in a year and he can't develop talent? Or is there anything new you're hearing? I don't think there's a negative recruiting narrative that the Peristyle hasn't seen. Whether it's coming from trolls or actual Trojan fans, I think there's very few things said about USC football these days that the Peristyle members have not seen. With that said, I think right now, in terms of the recruiting trail and what I'm hearing from recruits, player development, I think, is something that still comes up. This early in the recruiting process, it's not the full court press on negative recruiting that you'll get in November and December. Having said that, I think just because USC is so aggressive and the fact that they are so active and proactive in recruiting these kids and consistently recruiting these kids and remaining in consistent contact, which we haven't seen from USC in past years, I think that really makes it a little harder for other schools to be able to negatively recruit. When you're passionate and consistent about your message, it makes it much harder for another school to be able to try to undermine that message. And I think USC left the door open and allowed other schools to get in and recruit against them in past years because there were long periods of time, sometimes 2 or 3 months, where a prospect would say, yeah, I haven't heard from this position coach. I haven't talked to USC since May, and now we're getting into the beginning of September. That, I don't think, is going to happen. I think right now, like I said, USC has been so consistent with their message, and they're on top of it, and they're on top of what kids are hearing. I think it will. There'll be a battle. There'll be negative recruiting, and there will be that point in time where the assistant coaches have to be able to combat it to some extent. But I think their barrage of recruitment, their blitzkrieg of staying on top of kids and recruiting these kids much harder than other schools, I think that in and of itself makes it much harder for that narrative to really take hold. Our next question comes from Cravens for Heisman. He asks, what is the latest time for Flo, speaking of former five-star Upland linebacker Justin Flo, to transfer to USC? Is there a time frame we could know by? Any nuggets at all, Gerard? Any nuggets, please, something about Justin Flo. Give us some type of wink or some type of nod. Now, I'm on record as saying that I don't believe Justin Flo will end up at USC, whether it's a transfer or not, because we're not 100% clear of his status with Oregon right now. There's been some conflicting information there, but I don't want to get too much into that. And certainly, Justin himself, at least on social media, has acted as if he's going to Oregon and that he is comfortable with that decision and he's going to play for Oregon next year. Now, that 9 times out of 10 is enough, but because I've gone through the Brew McCoy situation, I've gone through several other situations where there have been transfers or commitments or decommitments, and the parties involved have not always been upfront and honest about their intentions. So you do have to leave that door open until it's completely shut when Justin Flo is making tackles and sacks in an Oregon uniform. Our next question is about tight ends, which I think we already answered. So we'll go down to David Long. He asks 2 questions. First, what are the relative strengths and weaknesses of Jake Garcia and Miller Moss? Second, as things sit right now, would you say it's more or less than 50% that we get both Foreman and JT? So I'll answer the second question first, talking about Corey Foreman, the 5-star defensive end from Corona Centennial, and JT Tuimoloau, the 5-star defensive end from Sammamish Eastside Catholic High School. I think, and I know you're not going to like this answer, but it probably hovers right around that 50 percentile. In terms of the probability of USC landing both players, I think some days it's probably in that 40 percentile, and then other days it might be closer to 60%. It really is going to depend on how USC is able to recruit both and get them both on the same page. They have to be concise, and they have to be very clear with both players how they both fit into that defensive scheme. There has to be a blueprint there, and they both have to understand where they can contribute, how they can contribute, and be excited about being contributors in that USC defense uniquely. I know that's a bit of a stock neutral response, but I'm just not ready to take Corey Foreman and JT Tuimoloau to USC from possible, even plausible, to probable. As for the first question, Jake Garcia and Miller Moss, strengths and weaknesses. I don't take this as a Jake Garcia versus Miller Moss question so much as how to break them down individually, and I'm going to try not to ramble on here. I would say with Jake Garcia, first and foremost, committed to USC, he's very strong in the pocket. He's got good feet in the pocket, and he moves well outside the pocket. I will say that his ball placement sometimes is a little sketchy when he gets outside the pocket. I think his decision-making is pretty good, but he's not always the guy that's going to push the ball downfield with a big arm. He tends to like to check down. He does manage a bit when he gets outside the pocket. So he's one of those guys that does extend the play to some extent, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's an athlete that's going to necessarily gash the defense for 10, 20 yards when he gets outside the pocket. He does keep his eyes downfield, however, and he makes good decisions, but again, the ball placement is probably the bigger question. I would say the zip on the ball and the ball placement. The great thing about a guy like Sam Darnold, who is a bit more athletic, but still kept his eyes downfield when he got outside the pocket. His first instinct was to try to make a play downfield with his arm. It wasn't necessarily to run with the ball, but he had a cannon for an arm. He could get the ball out of his hands quickly, and he could take it downfield even if he was throwing the ball off his back foot or he wasn't completely with his feet underneath him and getting his shoulder squared. He could still put enough velocity on the ball that it would get there quickly. With Garcia, I see sometimes that ball flutters a little bit, and because the ball placement isn't great, it could cause your offensive coordinator's heart to skip a beat. As for Miller Moss, he's a very polished quarterback in the pocket. He has a smooth, quick release. I think from the standpoint of the ball that he throws, it's very catchable. He puts great spin on it. I think his ball placement is very good. Not a big arm quarterback either, but I think in terms of trajectory and the amount of passes that he has, I think he's a little more prolific as a quarterback. But I will say, and I'm kind of getting into a versus conversation here, which I don't want to, but I think Garcia is just a stronger, bigger athlete at this point. So when I look at Miller Moss throwing against air and he's in a drill where he has to get outside the pocket, his ball placement is great. But I question in the back of my mind, would he be able to make that play if getting outside the pocket involved having to break a tackle or having to spin away from a blindside rusher? I don't know. I think with Garcia, he is a little stronger. I think his footwork is just a little better, and I think there's more of a chance that he's actually going to be able to get outside the pocket. And while his ball placement maybe isn't as polished, it's not quite as accurate, it's still a potential play that he can make, whereas he's not going to be tackled inside the pocket immediately by that pass rusher. The next question is from Charmack, who asks, do you see Rayshon Davis as a serious possibility to flip to USC, or has that ship sailed and gone? Rayshon Davis, the 6'1", 220-pound, four-star linebacker from Mater Dei High School, rated as an outside linebacker, projected by some schools as an inside linebacker, including by USC. I do think USC has a pretty good chance at flipping him. I think, in general, there's a good chance that he does decommit from LSU. Upon decommitting from LSU, I would say at that point, USC and ASU would be the two schools that would be battling for his commitment. The next question is from Duffy Trojan, who asks, any update on Sierre? Sierre Wright, being the cornerback from Loyola, four-star, runs a 10-8-2 for Loyola High School, do you think his acting career could have an impact on his recruitment? Yes, I do. For those who don't know, Sierra Wright was actually cast in Space Jam 2 as LeBron James' son. Now, I don't know if production is still going for that movie. It's probably been put on hold with the quarantine. But Sierra Wright actually has quite a few television shows and appearances under his belt. So this is not something that he wants to do. This is something that he's doing, and he's been successful at it. I think being in Los Angeles makes it much more convenient to be an actor. You want to go on auditions. You want to be able to network. You want to be in the loop with what's going on, and you want to have the best people representing you, and they're all in LA. You're not going to get that in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You're not going to get that in Seattle, Washington. You're not going to get that in Norman, Oklahoma. So I think for sure, if acting is important to him and he's not looking to take an extended break from acting, there's no better place than Los Angeles to continue his career. Our next question comes from Biggie BC, who asks, who is plan B at quarterback if Miller Moss goes elsewhere? That's a good question, and I don't know if there's a definitive answer just yet. Some of it may hinge on whether there's a high school football season and whether Miller Moss decides to reclassify or not. I could see Miller Moss and Jake Garcia both ending up at USC, but I think it would be in a scenario where Miller Moss reclassifies for the 2020 season. I sort of feel like if Miller Moss and Jake Garcia were going to both end up in the 2021 class together, it would have already happened back in March when Miller Moss was originally going to commit. So the question then becomes, will there be a high school football season next year in Southern California or in California in general? I'm not optimistic. I think when the Cal State universities opted to have online courses only, it was a signal to unify school districts that they probably were not going to have on-campus instruction. And certainly when it comes to the grand scheme of things, football is going to be down the list of priorities. And we can't look at it from the perspective of the modern days, the St. John Boscos, the Corona Centennials. When you're talking about high school football, you have to look at the city schools. You have to look at the public schools who have a lot less resources and are much less organized. I don't see 90% of the schools in California having the resources to take the precautions necessary to travel and play high school football games with fans or without fans. I know I'm taking the expect the worst, hope for the best approach to the situation, but I feel like with the amount of politics and bureaucracy that is involved with the pandemic right now, if a vast majority of schools cannot play high school football, then no schools will play high school football. And let's face it, high school football does not generate as much revenue as it does at the collegiate or pro level. So there's not as much economic pressure to bring it back right away. Hopefully there's a vaccine or effective treatment that makes this a moot point. So to finish up answering this question, I think if you take Miller Moss out of the equation, plan B for USC is really a quarterback that's already committed to another school. Our next question comes from Earl Warren. He asked, do you have an impression of whether the COVID situation has shifted any decision-making power away from recruits and toward their parents? I feel like the conventional wisdom of kids will stay closer to home really means parents won't let their kids have as much freedom to go out of state. Do you think this might cause some kids to resent their schools if they feel like they're being forced to settle? You know, contrary to popular belief, there's a champion in every recruitment. That champion, 9 times out of 10, is an adult. It's a parent. It's a high school coach. It's someone close to that teenager that has a lot of influence over where they sign a letter of intent. With the COVID situation, what I found talking to recruits is that their list of priorities and factors that are important to them in choosing a college has changed for two main reasons. One, because football has been taken away from them, at least temporarily, and it does give them a different perspective on what's important to them in a college. And two, I think because their parents want them close, they want to be close to family. And in uncertain times, you tend to search for familiarity and stability. I've talked about this many times before in regards to Clay Helton being on the coaching hot seat and how that uncertainty has handicapped USC in out-of-state recruiting. Yeah, they can go out and get kids that are maybe three-star kids that don't have a plethora of offers. But when you're going across the country and you're trying to get a four-star, five-star guy, there better be a stable situation with your coaching staff and with the trajectory of your football program. Our next question is from Nonvet1, an OG Peristyle poster. And he wants to know, you and Ryan originally mentioned that 21, 22 rides were available. Now we're hearing 25 plus. Could you talk about this? Simply put, it's just a projection. It's a projection based on transfers and early draft defections. Early in the year, you're really looking at just the core number of graduates that you're going to have, and then you look at the obvious early draft defections. As you get later in the year and you get post-spring ball, the depth chart, whether officially or unofficially, starts to sort itself out. Then you get a better idea of potential transfers. And that's really where the number tends to increase. And it tends to increase a lot when you're talking about a school which has maybe a new coaching staff, or in USC's case, you have a new defensive coaching staff. So you start to get a better feel for the potential players that may transfer, and that's always going to raise the numbers. Our next question comes from South Coast Trojan. He asks, next commit and when possibly? Well, I can't give you a name, but I do expect, as I said at the top of the show, USC will get a commitment this week. I think USC is in line to get commitments here almost weekly going into June. So I won't give you any specific hints, but stay tuned to the Peristyle because it will probably become obvious during the week. The next question is from P. Polly. He asked, you mentioned a possible O-line commit. Is that still on or is that back in the refrigerator? I think you guys are trying to tag team me here for this commit scoop. I'll say that the offensive line commit is in the refrigerator because the light is out, the eggs are cooling, the butter's getting hard, and the jello's jiggling. So there you go. You can have it both ways. Our next question is from Jay Rich. He asks, OL targets or commits that have the best shot at making an early impact, and in parentheses, 20 or 21 commits. Well, there's going to be more than 20 or 21 commits. We're looking at a full class, if not more. And O-line targets or commits that have the best shot at making an early impact. Wow. Well, USC only has two commitments right now from the offensive line. Out of that group, Mason Murphy certainly has the best shot at making an early impact. I wouldn't necessarily say he's going to make an early impact, but he has the best shot at that. In terms of USC's target list, I'd say Tristan Lee out of Virginia could probably play as a true freshman as an offensive tackle. Definitely by his sophomore year, I think he could make an impact. Josh Simmons out of San Diego, Helix High School, possibly could make an early impact. I think that would be more his sophomore year, but I like his athleticism. I like his footwork. I think he's explosive for an offensive lineman. I just think strength-wise, that's going to be the thing. You put him at guard, you put him in the interior, you can cover him up a little bit. That helps, but still, you're going to be playing against some grown-ass men on the defensive line, and that's always the big leap from high school football to college football. College football, you're playing against grown men that are 300-plus pounds. In high school football, you're seeing a lot of guys that are maybe 200 pounds at the most. So I think talent-wise, Josh Simmons is capable, but in terms of physicality, that might be the thing that holds him back as a true freshman from being able to play a lot of reps. And the same really goes for Tristan Lee as well, but I think there's a little more physicality there and just a little more ability that he could actually come in and there's a chance that he'd be able to actually contribute as a true freshman. Our next question comes from Mix with three X's, sexy time. What is the relationship between modern day's football program and USC? How do you think modern day and Rawlinson view USC at this present time compared to 5 months ago? I'd been told that Rawlinson was not enthusiastic about encouraging his players to attend USC as he had been in the past. If this is true, does this change because USC has a staff that actually recruits now, or Helton has to show he can develop talent and win major games for USC to have a major pull there again? Thanks again for the recruiting podcast. Chris in San Jose. Yeah, I think the answer here is pretty obvious. Bruce Rawlinson graduated from USC. He's a big fan of USC football. Now, that's not to say that he steers kids to USC, but certainly if you follow USC football And USC's gone from competing in national championships, winning national titles, playing in the Rose Bowl, to going 5-7. You're going to be disappointed in USC and a lot less enthusiastic talking about USC. Now, whether that's directly or indirectly, the people around you are going to see that you're not necessarily going to have that same positive energy about USC. And to compound matters, if USC isn't taking advantage of their presence at local high schools and not recruiting those high schools hard, then that is just going to make it even easier to A, not talk about USC, or feel like USC isn't necessarily headed in the right direction, especially when you yourself have a very successful football program. I know it's apples and oranges to speak on high school to college, but when you win as many games as Bruce Rawlinson, you start to feel like, hey, you know what? I had no thing or two about winning football. And USC right now, it's not winning football. So yeah, I think that the recruiting efforts now, as they've stepped up and intensified, it helps. But certainly in that context, it's about winning football games. And if you want Bruce Rawlinson to sing the praises of USC, I think USC's got to go out there and make their fan base proud and make their alumni base proud. And that comes from taking care of the brand in big football games, taking care of their players, and making sure those players graduate. The next question is from TrojanTito66. He asks, who is the better prospect, Jalen Davies, or Nathaniel Wiggins? By the way, I really like the Recruiting Rant podcast. Thank you very much. I would definitely rate Nathaniel Wiggins higher. I think he's a superior athlete. I like Jalen Davies as a football player, but when you're talking about length and speed at the cornerback position specifically, I think Wiggins is just the better overall prospect. I also like that Wiggins plays both sides of the football. I learned a long time ago with TJ Bryant, who was a five-star cornerback that USC signed out of Tallahassee, Florida, Lincoln High School. Now, at that time, Lincoln High School was pumping out blue-chip prospects. A lot of top-end guys, they'd have, you know, three or four four-star, five-star level guys. And watching TJ Bryant's film, he only played cornerback. He never played offense. He didn't do much on special teams. He was just playing cornerback. The issue there is, at the high school level, quarterbacks are not going to throw to your side of the field if you have a four-star, five-star reputation. So in terms of evaluation, TJ Bryant, you really never saw anything from him. You couldn't judge or evaluate his athletic ability, his ball skills, his physicality, any of that, because he really just played on an island and nobody ever threw the football his way. With Nate Wiggins, you're seeing him play special teams. You're seeing him make a really big impact on offense. He's got quite a few clips where he's not only catching the football, but he's on bubble screens. He's zigzagging through the field, running for touchdowns. I think, you know, overall, you just get to see his impact at the high school level and how that will translate to playing just cornerback at the college level. Our next question comes from BamF95, who looks a little bit like Tracy Pearson. What a coincidence. His question is, are there any recruits other than maybe Davis that are committed elsewhere that USC is still pursuing? If so, who? Well, we're not going to spill all the beans on this podcast. Of course, USC is still in communication with prospects that are committed to other schools. I would check the target list. That's the general gist of players that are still hearing from USC, but I don't want to get into any specifics as to who may be the most receptive of the recruiting. We'll just kind of leave it at USC is definitely still involved with some other prospects that are committed to other schools. His second question is, which football game was better, Tecmo Bowl, NCAA football, or Madden? I definitely played a lot more NCAA football than I did Madden or Tecmo Bowl. With NCAA football, I actually used to contribute updated rosters to a form called Operation Sports, which involved actually hacking the game save files from your Xbox, bringing them over to a program called Horizon, and someone made a program that was sort of a spreadsheet program that would be able to read the attributes and values of the game saves, and then you could manipulate those and change those. So we could get much more accurate rosters You got rid of skinny arms. You got rid of the big heads on wide receivers. You could change the pass coverage, the pass rush, and make it just a little more fine-tuned, and it improved the game. So I spent a lot of hours on NCAA football, and still have NCAA football now. Our next question comes from Chris Trevino, so this will be a troll question. Gerard, you're always one to send me interesting YouTube recommendations or recapping your latest deep dives. I'm curious as to what is the first video you remember discovering from the early internet era, or in a more general sense, your first memories on the early days of the Wild West internet. First of all, the troll in this question was the MLA English 101 convoluted writing style that he used, which turned my brain into a pretzel. The first experiences I had with YouTube were music. I come from the days of Blockbuster Music, where you'd go down and you pick up an album, and then you'd sit at a listening station and you'd preview the album before you bought it. That turned into peer-to-peer programs like Napster, and then Kazaa, and then Morpheus, and then LimeWire. So after those programs started getting shut down, or just became less consistent for finding new music, along came YouTube. And even today, people upload entire albums and songs to YouTube, and I listen to a ton of music on YouTube. But in terms of early day content creators that I'd watch on YouTube, I'd say the first one that stands out immediately is FPS Russia. If you don't know who FPS Russia is, his channel is a cross between Jackass and Chuck Norris. If you like explosions, automatic weapons, and near-death experiences caught on film, you'll love FPS Russia. The next question comes from TrojanDan22. He asks, with everything going on in the world, is there any buzz about former California recruits, current FBS players, looking to move back closer to home? Yeah, there's been some of that talk, and I think that's where the rumors regarding Justin Flo come from. But again, they're just rumors right now. I think a lot depends on the NCAA and whether they grant immediate eligibility to transfers next year. If there's a one-time waiver where players can transfer without having to sit out, that changes the game a little bit. I think you're going to see a flood of potential transfers into the transfer portal. Next question comes from TDavy93. He asks, we've been Tia Sevilla's leader for a while. Will he be in this class? Yeah, still predict Tia Sevilla to be in USC's class. Haven't heard anything different. Tia Sevilla being the 6'5", 250-pound offensive tackle prospect from Las Vegas, Nevada. He's being recruited by USC, however, as a defensive tackle. Next question is CS Tahoe 303. GM, really enjoy the Recruiting Rant podcast. Hope this continues. Thank you very much. Since the SEC already knows what they are going to be doing in regards to the upcoming season, do you see the Pac-12 formulating a plan within the next few weeks, or are there just too many unknowns at this point? Didn't they say they were going to let the states decide on whether or not there would be a football season? Yeah, I think there are just too many unknowns at this point to be able to know what the Pac-12 is going to do, what the NCAA is going to do, what the states individually are going to do. Right now, California is probably one of the most conservative in terms of reopening businesses. But in general, I think there's just too many variables at play to be able to predict what the college football season is going to look like if there is going to be a college football season. Next question comes from SC4Life20. Read the rumors on Justin Flo a couple weeks ago. I have not read anything on Jonathan Flo. Is there any news on him? That's a good question. I'm not sure that Jonathan Flo is being recruited exceedingly hard by USC right now. I kind of question what his fit would be in that defense for USC. He's not the same player as Justin Flo, and he's more of really a Sam linebacker in what you would see in a traditional 4-3 defense. So him as an outside linebacker, he'd really have to play sort of a star position, which I've said this before, tends to be more of a big safety position. You're usually going to take a kid that's playing safety in high school who's got some length, who's got some size, and then you put some weight on him, and then you put him up near the line of scrimmage. So a guy like Talanoa Hufanga or Isaiah Polamau. Jonathan Flo is about 6'1", 200, maybe 210 pounds, and he's been an edge rusher the last couple years for Upland High School. In USC's defense, I don't think he's big enough to be a jack linebacker or a B backer. I think he got to be a little taller, have longer arms. So again, I don't know if he really fits into the current scheme of USC football. The next question comes from Fold My Shorts. He asks, you mentioned a while back that USC might try and target a cornerback that had already been recruited or had some connection to USC in the past. Just wondering if that's still in play and if the staff is actively looking for a transfer target. The answer to this question is yes, USC is actively looking for transfers and specifically looking for a transfer at the defensive back position. Is the player still in play that I alluded to in the war room a few weeks ago? Potentially. Again, going back to the NCAA waiver, if next year the NCAA grants a one-time immediate eligibility waiver, then I think this player, from what we've been told by sources, will come to USC. The next question comes from Trojan53, who asks, Gerard, is Drevno getting any help on the recruiting front from other staff members because of the concern regarding big misses along the offensive line in the past? Yeah, for sure. USC has Vianney Talmaivao recruiting the offensive line. Other assistant staff members recruit the offensive line. But Tim Drevno is sort of the one that's ultimately responsible for offensive line recruiting because USC tends to recruit by position only. Now, other assistant position staff members may help as well because of their connections in an area or to a high school. But at the end of the day, Tim Drevno is the guy that's, you know, going to sink or swim with the players that he signed. So, yeah, he does have some help. There are some resources there. But ultimately, he's the one that's going to be accountable for who USC signs and develops along the offensive line. The next question comes from BFrost84, who asks, why do you believe we are not really pursuing Moliki Mataveo? Mataveo, the 6'6", 240-pound tight end, four-star, number 7-ranked tight end in the nation from Las Vegas, Nevada. I don't think he was ever very serious about USC, so it may have been similar to Brock Bowers, who basically told USC, thanks but no thanks. And with Mataveo, might have been the same thing. I don't know for sure, but USC really hasn't been very heavily involved with him. Certainly not to the extent as other tight ends. And like I said before, earlier in the podcast, USC is only after a couple of tight ends really seriously. There's a good chance in this class that they don't even take a tight end. Our next question comes from Big Nick 21 USC. He asks, GM, what's the problem with our crosstown rivals and their lame approach to recruiting, considering they made the big hire 2 years ago and have really not made any noise on the West Coast recruiting? Fight on. Nick, I'm going to have to direct you to Bro and our man on the scene, Bam95, who looks like Tracy Pearson. Maybe he's got some insight as to what's going on with the UCLA football program. I'll be honest with you, I'm still surprised that they have not had more success on the field. With recruiting, Chip Kelly has never been an enthusiastic recruiter. He's never liked recruiting. And I think a lot of the recruiting that he did at Oregon was supplemented by Oregon and Nike and all the peripherals. Ultimately, I think Chip Kelly's philosophy is to let his scheme and his system do the recruiting. But when you're not winning football games and your scheme's just like everybody else's scheme, it's tough to be able to get top-notch five-star, four-star players to come play for you. The next question comes from 34 Jump Cut, who asks, GM, what song would you put as the soundtrack to these USC coaches' recruiting momentum right now? I think that's an easy one. I think we talked a little bit about this. It would be Pantera because of the Texas twang, and it would be Domination. And not just Domination, but it'd be Pantera, Domination, In Moscow, Monsters of Rock. Check it out on YouTube. 1.6 million people. There you go. Our next question is from KFlow19, who asks, GM, is USC doing any virtual visits or anything like that? I read schools like Oklahoma are doing it and noticed that are starting to pick up some recruiting momentum. Wondering if these would be helpful for USC, especially with out-of-state recruits. Also, would those be considered unofficial visits? No, they are not considered unofficial visits. They are virtual visits. An unofficial visit, you have to be there on the campus in person. USC hasn't done any of these specifically. I think they're using most of their time to talk to recruits. basically to communicate with them and try to understand what they're looking for in a college, being able to talk to them about what USC offers as a college and what USC offers as a football program. The virtual visits, you know, for the most part, that's good for out-of-state recruits, and I'm sure there's definitely benefits to it, but at this point, USC wants to use that time, I think, to actually do recruiting instead of looking at various different departments, the library, maybe even the football stadium, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, truth be told, recruits can do that on their own. They can go on the internet and they can find pictures and they can go on campus tours. You can use Google Maps if you want to go on a campus visit. So I think USC right now, the coaching strategy is if we get a kid on FaceTime, if we get him on the phone, we want to recruit him. Our next question is from Big Jim Trojan, who asked, Jim, any news regarding the top running back prospect of the 2022 class, Relique Brown? I know he transferred into Modern Day, but that's our pipeline school. Parentheses, and Oregon can dream all they want if they think they're going to stick around there. Make a big assumption that the season is played, and we win the conference, more parentheses, which should be expected minimum of a talented USC team overcoming Helton, in parentheses. What do you think about our ability to recruit him against Oregon and Oklahoma? Well, Big Jim, that was a big question. I think USC has a really good shot at landing Relique Brown. I think he fits what Mike Jenks likes in a running back. He fits USC's system better than he fits Oregon's system right now. Certainly Oklahoma would be a school that I think is going to be a big player in his recruitment. But I definitely think USC has a great shot at landing him. Our next question is from Gunham, who goes back to the Rivals days of the Peristyle. He asks, usually over the course of a season, you would see several four-star players graduate to five-star status between their junior and senior year. Due to the current virus crisis, if the football season is canceled nationwide, do you anticipate any changes or elevation of star grades for any of these guys? In other words, as a product of the coronavirus, would you agree that four-star players today that probably would have been projected as five-star players their senior season will never reach that potential before heading to college? That's a tough question to answer. I guess it depends on how much stock you put into the development they would get from their high schools their senior year. Physical development will still be there. They will still develop physically once they get to college. But they're going to basically have a year off of football where all they're going to do is train, and that training is probably going to be limited. Will that handicap their progression from a transition standpoint, going from high school to college their freshman years? Perhaps. But we also have to take into account the possibility that college football may not be played this season. So everybody's at a disadvantage. But I would say certainly if you're talking about the transition and the immediate impact that a player could make who's a four-star that ends up being a five-star with the senior year, yeah, that transition is not going to be there. And if the college players are playing and the high school players aren't, it is going to take them a little longer to be able to hit the ground running and to get back in the swing of things and to get back into that mode of not just playing football, but playing football at an even higher level. So the jump for them is going to be increased to some extent. I don't know if I answered your question, but if I didn't, just give me a follow-up on the Peristyle, and I'll try to reply and give you a more succinct answer. Our next question comes from Jay Rich again. He asked, Dante Thornton, update, seen a few crystal balls go the other way. Dante Thornton, the 6'4", 185-pound, four-star wide receiver out of Baltimore, Maryland, he's had a few crystal balls go to Oregon. I think he still has a couple for Penn State. I know USC is recruiting him. I know USC is vying for a visit. Other than that, I really don't have an update on his recruitment. I know Thornton is really the only bigger receiver, at least lengthwise, that USC is recruiting. Troy Franklin is another. Troy is in that 6'2", 6'3 range. And I think with USC, the priority is probably going to be to get Troy Franklin. But certainly, they're still in it with Dante Thornton, and they're going to continue to recruit him. Receiver is probably the one position that you don't really worry too much about with USC right now, just because offensively, the production at the receiver position has been ridiculous. And it's very easy to go out and recruit just based on statistics and probably land some pretty good players. Kerry Colbert is a good recruiter. He's got an NFL pedigree. He's a good recruiter because he knows USC and he knows how to sell USC because he played at USC. Also, I think one of the factors that you have to look at is the offense this year when you've got Ken Slovis coming back, sophomore year, you're going to have him being more experienced, probably being able to make better decisions. He could be more prolific, but then at the same time, a lot of the success in production at the wide receiver position came as a result of the running game not being consistent because of the amount of injuries that they had at the running back position. So if USC wants to be more balanced and they want to run the ball better, which I think if they're going to win more games, they're going to have to run the ball better, specifically in the red zone, then maybe you're not going to have those crazy outrageous numbers by the wide receivers. But still, the wide receiver position and the quarterback position in this offense is going to put up some pretty sick stats, and that's going to be really easy to recruit on. Next question comes from Troy1981, who asks, what is our O-line recruitment going to look like come December? Well, I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't give you a list of who will actually be committed. I think by the time December rolls around, USC will have 4 offensive linemen committed. It'll be a decent class. I think a lot hinges on whether it's a really good class from being a decent class is offensive tackle, and whether USC is able to flip an offensive tackle from another school like Oregon, or they're able to sign Kingsley Suamataia. If they're able to get Kingsley Suamataia, then obviously it goes from being a decent class to a really good class. If they're not, then people are going to be a little bit underwhelmed. But I think 4 solid offensive linemen following the 2020 class where USC signed 6 offensive linemen, it's still pretty decent. Next question comes from SC Made, and he asks, Jim, you become head coach of USC. Well, great. How much am I getting paid a year? You get one coach to bring with you for only recruiting in parentheses. Who do you choose? Ed O, T, Gavin, Dante Williams? Curious as to who you have as a top dog of recruiting since you've been covering the team. That's a good question. Is there someone not on the list you would choose? Yeah, potentially. I mean, what about Tosh Lapoy? I look at it and I think, first and foremost, I want a recruiter with some West Coast ties. If I'm only going to get one big-time recruiter to bring with me, I want somebody with West Coast ties so I can really shut down and lock up the best West Coast talent. Tosh Lapoy obviously has a background in that. He's a defensive line coach by trade, and defensive line is always the hardest position to recruit nationally. And seeing that he was at Alabama and he was down in the South and he did a great job for Alabama recruiting front 7 guys, I think I might actually go with Tosh Lapoy. He's young. He's still in his prime in terms of grinding. I know he's in the NFL now, but I think he could come back to college and still be a really good recruiter. So I think I'm going to think outside the box a little bit here and go with Tosh Lapoy. Our next question comes from Reggie Bush Graduates. He asks, how do you feel about the new staff configuration and what are your way too early thoughts on their chances to finish in or near the playoffs and seal a top 5 class? Second question, which is a bit of a follow-up here, can they still finish top 5 after something like a 9-3 season? Boy, these questions are getting harder and harder to answer. It's tough to project where USC is going to finish next season on the football field. We still have a lot of questions as to whether the cultural change on the defensive side of the ball is going to take, whether they're going to be a more physical team in practice, they're going to tackle more. We obviously didn't get to see any of that in spring ball. And the offensive line is still a huge concern. Is Elijah Vera Tucker's move to left tackle going to be enough that it secures the offensive line? Are they going to be able to keep the quarterbacks up and healthy during the whole season? It's really tough to say. I do feel more comfortable saying that even with 9 wins, this is still going to be a pretty good recruiting class. 8-9 wins, that's sort of that tipping point where you have some momentum or maybe you don't. And it really does depend on what games you're winning and what games you're losing and if you're able to finish the season strong. But I think this is a staff that in general does a good job recruiting. I think they're going to be able to sell the depth chart. They're going to be able to sell some players leaving early for the NFL draft. And if there's not a huge bunch of questions hanging over Clay Helton's head in terms of his future as head coach at USC, then I think they were going to have more success down the stretch. I think they would have had more success if USC would have handled that better last year potentially, maybe they're able to get Justin Flo. Maybe they're able to get Bryce Young. They really put all their eggs in those baskets and they missed out. And that was really one of the bigger reasons why the recruiting class was so bad. It was a very small number in the 2020 class. And so the guys that you missed, it was that much more of a miss than it would have been if it was a class of 20 plus. This is going to be a bigger recruiting class. So, you know, hits and misses are going to be a little less significant. But again, there are certain positions like offensive tackle, the cornerback position, certain positions which are need positions which you do have to still fill. But I feel better about the recruiting class, and that regardless of whether it's a great season or just a mediocre season, because 9 wins is still pretty mediocre by Trojan fans' expectations, I think the recruiting class will still be good. But it's really hard to predict whether this team is a 9-win team, or this team can win 11 games, or this team can actually get to a playoff. That, I think we're just going to have to wait and see, and going to have to try to make some projections based on fall camp, obviously, if there's a fall camp. Our next question comes from Gate Call, who asks, what is the recruiting pitch at running back? And does Step, Marquis Step, and Keenan Christian, performances last season help? To answer the last question, no, I don't think Marquis Step or Keenan Christian really did enough to help recruit the running back position. If you want to be able to recruit on stats, you got to have a 1,000-yard rusher. So I would say no, neither of those guys really did anything, I think, to open up eyes of any running backs in the 2021 class. In terms of the pitch and the sell at running back, they're really telling the running backs, hey, you're going to come in here and you're going to be able to do it all. You're going to catch the ball in the backfield. You're going to be able to run the ball out of the backfield. You're going to be an all-around athlete out of the offensive backfield. And that's what you're going to have to do in the NFL, because that's the NFL game now. You have to be able to catch the ball, you have to be able to pass block, and you have to be able to run the ball. So that's really the pitch from a scheme standpoint. Obviously, from a tradition standpoint, USC has had some fantastic running backs. It's running back you. But more recently, USC has not had that 1,000-yard rusher who's been the face of the offense. I've just talked to Byron Cardwell, the 4-star running back at a Morse High School in San Diego, and he talked about USC's recruiting pitch, and he said, you know, USC's looking for that one running back to step up and be the guy. The running back position just has not had that go-to playmaker in a long time. And people were a little critical of that comment, but it's a factual comment. USC hasn't really had a playmaker at the running back position who's been able to stay healthy for a majority of the season since Ronald Jones. So yeah, that in itself makes it harder to recruit the running back position. USC, you know, offensively, they can make it more exciting. They can throw the ball to the running back. They can get him out in space. But ultimately, you got to have a guy that's going to be able to run the ball 15 to 20 times a game and be able to stack up the yards and stack up some touchdowns. Our next question comes from Trojan for Life, who asks a follow-up question to a question about the defensive line, which came up earlier in the podcast. He says, to build on this, where does T.S. Sevilla, parentheses, and for that matter, long shot Mason Smith, fit into this class of 405? Also, you've gone over where Foreman and Tui Moloau would fit in along the defensive front, but can you compare and contrast Mobley, Sevilla, and Armitage? We talked a little bit about T.S. Sevilla earlier in the podcast, and while I'm still predicting him to end up at USC right now, I think it is interesting fit-wise to look at him against a guy like Aaron Armitage. I think Armitage is a bit more athletic, but he offers some of the same physical tools that T.S. Sevilla does. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. With Mobley, I think he's definitely a defensive tackle. I think he's in the mold of a Malik Dorton, maybe a Lawan Ramsey type of player. Mason Smith at 6'5", 320 pounds is a nose guard. He's a one shade. He's a zero technique. He's a guy that you're going to put right over the center and try to overwhelm the center at the point of attack. The next question comes from Dressler52, who asks one more question about T.S. Sevilla. T.S. Sevilla is a very popular guy in this podcast. I know we are recruiting him as a defensive lineman, but is there any chance SC starts to recruit him as an offensive lineman, especially with Toya and Mobley committed and positive momentum for Foreman, JT, Armitage, and maybe even Mason? There's certainly that possibility, which is why I think even with the defensive linemen that USC's recruiting, you sort of keep the door open to potentially have Sevilla part of that class. So we'll see. What makes it really difficult is the fact that you don't have the May evaluation period where college coaches can be on campus at those high schools and they can just see the physical development of those players. And for a player like Sevilla, who is ranked as an offensive tackle by 24/7 Sports, you want to be able to see if he's got the athleticism to be able to play defensive line. Or would he be better putting on more weight and playing as an offensive tackle? The next question is from USC NMD. He asks, GM, can you name a few of this year's explosive and fast athletes at their positions SC is recruiting? Well, the first player that comes to mind is Xavier Worthy, a 6'1", 160-pound wide receiver from Central East High School in Fresno. He's ranked the nation's number 24 receiver and runs a 10.55 in the 100 meters. Jalen Smith would be another player out of Bishop Alemany High School that you would have to consider. Runs a 10.88, 10.9 in the 100 meters. He plays running back. He plays wide receiver. He plays cornerback. He plays safety. USC's looking at him as a cornerback, but that's one of the more explosive players that plays all over the football field. And finally, Sierra Wright, who we talked about earlier in the podcast. 6'1", 175-pound cornerback out of Loyola High School. Runs a 10.82. Like Jalen Smith, he's a guy that contributes up both sides of the ball. So in terms of the players that USC is targeting and has a decent shot at, I would say that's probably the group that's the most explosive. The next question is from Trav1126, who asks, what is the rumor regarding Jaden Woodby? Also, do you think USC has the upper hand with Sierra Wright because of his acting career and wanting to stay in LA? We've obviously already covered Wright. As for the Jaden Woodby rumors, I think that's just people connecting dots. They're guessing, trying to figure out who the potential transfer at defensive back could be from another school. And Jaden Woodby makes sense because he was a former local player. He's a player that USC recruited. And he's a player that has SC ties in his family. Our next question comes from Vegas guy Paul. Las Vegas, where I've long lived, should be worth at least a couple of SC quality recruits a year. We have one premium program, Gorman, and about 20 other high schools. Any ideas how to increase the influence up here? Obviously, a home and away with UNLV most years as our tune-up game would help the connection. Anything else that would stop the bleeding to Oregon and Oklahoma? Well, I'll tell you, Oklahoma got into Vegas through David White, who they hired, I believe, as a grad assistant back in the day. And he was kind of the architect. He was really the first coach that got Gorman off the ground and helped make Gorman a national power. And Oklahoma was smart. They grabbed him, they turn around, they got DeMarco Murray, and they got a few players from that Vegas area since then. I think, first of all, your idea of having a home and home is a great idea. I think that in and of itself from an exposure standpoint is a big deal. The other thing is, I think with USC, if you're recruiting by territory, you're going to have a coach there every single year. But when you recruit by position, some years you may not have any wide receivers in Las Vegas that you want to recruit. Some years, you may not have any offensive linemen that you want to recruit. Maybe there's no defensive backs that you like. But if you're recruiting by territory, it doesn't matter what position is the position you're wanting to recruit. You're going to have somebody there. You're going to have boots on the ground in May. And they're going to be able to continue to build that relationship with those high school football programs and those high school coaches. When you're there by position, it's sort of a hodgepodge of a bunch of different faces coming and going. And like I said, you may want to recruit a five-star receiver out of Bishop Gorman one year, but that wide receiver coach, if he's recruiting by position, might not be back in Vegas for another 2 years before there's another SC-level talent at that position for him to recruit. Our next question comes from BU for USC, who asks, can you share some of the specific details on the backstory on how Jonathan A'u ended up not being a Trojan? Well, without going into the rest of the question, it's pretty simple. USC didn't do a very good job of recruiting him out of the gates, and his mom did not like specific coaches on the USC staff. She did not trust Johnny Nansen, who was his primary recruiter to begin with. Tim Drevno ended up coming in later because Neil Calloway was fired, and while Tim Drevno had a good relationship with the offensive line coach at Narbonne, he actually coached him in college, that only got USC's foot in the door late in the recruiting process. But the fact is, USC really had no relationship with his mother, and at the end of the day, that became the deal breaker. We did still hear that the night before signing day, the night before his ceremony, Jonathan Ahau actually called Clay Helton and told him he was committing to UFC. But between that point and the point of him actually announcing, he decided to flip back to Oregon and ended up signing with Oregon. Our next question comes from Matt Davidson. GM, thanks for the great response last week. Love the new format. Again, I'm double dipping, maybe triple dipping with questions. Tisk tisk. Hope you don't mind much. First question, do we have a serious shot at offensive tackle Kingsley Suomaatiya? Seems like too many signs are pointing towards Oregon, but we really need elite offensive tackles to replace Austin Jackson. Think I kind of touched on this. USC has a good shot. I'm not going to say that they lead at this point, but they're definitely in the battle. Second question, will any prospect commit this week? Already answered that. If so, which position could that prospect potentially be? Again, mum's the word. Next question comes from Sharmack. GM, besides Chris Claiborne, I believe there was another hire of similar position that was supposedly also filled, but the candidate was going through the vetting process with USC and the NCAA regulations. Do you have any further info on that? Thanks. You are correct. There is another position to be filled on the support staff, but unfortunately, we don't really have an update on that right now. We'll see probably at the end of the summer, although a lot of the staff positions that were in the process of being filled are going to be filled by June 1st. So potentially, we'll have an update for you on June 1st, but I think it's probably going to be closer to fall camp. So we'll keep you updated. The next question comes from Cassius L. I read ahead and I'm pronouncing that name properly now. He asks, what are the attributes that make a great recruiter? How has this changed in the last, say, 10 years? I'd say you have to have an established network of high school coaches that you know from your playing days. You have to be charming. You have to know how to use Instagram. You have to have an Xbox. And you have to work at it. You've got to grind. You've got to enjoy the hunt and the chase. Because if you don't enjoy it, that grind is eventually going to get to you and you're not going to want to recruit certain parts of the year. So you have to enjoy it to be able to get through it, to be able to get through the monotony, to deal with all the BS coming from 17-year-old kids that haven't played a down of college football. You've got to love it and you've got to have that thirst and that hunger and that competitiveness and that energy to be able to get you through those periods where it becomes monotonous and it becomes difficult. So that's what I would say makes a great recruiter in this day and age. The next question comes from Super Trojan 5, who asks, this question was never answered in the last podcast rank. I apologize for that. Reposting it. Assuming USC only gets Jake Garcia or Miller Moss, who are some of the options as the second quarterback? Is the coaching staff looking at a pro-style quarterback or a dual-threat quarterback? Two quarterbacks are needed in this class. Just wanted to know your thoughts on the plan of which two quarterbacks. We did kind of touch on this a little bit already. If it's Jake Garcia or Miller Moss, that second quarterback is probably going to be somebody that's committed to another school right now. Basically, because USC hasn't offered many quarterbacks in the 2021 class who are not already committed to another school. I would hazard a guess that that's probably going to be a pro-style quarterback first. Seems like USC and Clay Helton specifically, while they like mobility, they really covet quarterbacks that can throw the ball first. Our next question is from OCSJ, Trojan fan. He asks, excellent. Another podcast. I have a feeling we're taking six on the defensive line. One of these kids is rated as an offensive lineman. Any surprise interest that you could hint at USC? I know it would be a surprise, but it would be fun to know. Thanks for your podcast. I'm glad my thread helped start a pretty sweet trend. I feel like I butchered that question. You talked a little bit about Tia Sevilla, and that's the defensive lineman who you're looking at as an offensive lineman, potentially. We talked a little bit about that. I don't think USC takes six defensive linemen. I think you're looking for maybe five. And in terms of a hint at the next offensive line commit, I can't make a hint. Like I said, I think the next commit, it will be obvious within the week here, once that crystal ball drops. So stay tuned for that. The next question is from Golf Zero Hack or Golfo Hack. Based on what you see from the 2021 class, parentheses, if all sticks, including some of the porthole transfer arrivals, what additions from this group do you think will make an impact between very good and college football playoff level performances for the Trojans? Also, with recruiting being up in 2021, do you think this is also hurting other schools who had previously been taking advantage of USC's less than expected recruiting previously? Last question first, it's definitely hurting other schools. I think with USC recruiting well locally and locking down the talent in Southern California, it's definitely choking some of those schools that come from out of state, maybe a Notre Dame, maybe an Oklahoma, even Oregon to some extent. There are players that they were getting left and right that they're no longer getting because USC is recruiting so much better locally. So that is definitely one of the payoffs about being strong in your local recruiting. When you have a talent pool that's as strong as Southern California, you are going to not only get great players, but take those great players away from your opponents. In terms of what players in the 2021 committed class are potential impact players next season, I think really it's the safety position right now that's really a strength. So Zamirian, Gordon, potentially Kalen Bullock, one of those guys is going to have to step up and play, because USC could potentially lose both their starting safeties next year. The other position, and you talked about transfer arrivals, would be an offensive tackle. If USC could land a transfer offensive tackle, he would obviously have a huge impact on next season. Now, can they get one of those guys? You've got Jared Williams coming from Houston. You have Brandon Council, who's coming from Akron. So both those players could make an immediate contribution to the offensive line. And the final question of this hour-long recruiting rant podcast comes from C&G Trojan, who asks, how many of this year's signed offensive linemen will be here next year? Superior talent is being recruited. I hate to end the podcast on a question that I don't really have an answer for, but to be fair, the 2020 offensive line class hasn't even stepped foot on campus at USC yet. So until we can actually see those players up close and personal, we can see who can play offensive tackle, who's going to have to play guard. There's a few players that I've never seen play in person. Cortland Ford, Casey Collier. There are a lot of question marks there. So until we can see those players play in person, see what kind of shape they're in coming out of this quarantine, it's pretty hard to project who's actually going to transfer from the 2020 class because of the players being recruited in the 2021 class. Okay, folks, that's going to do it for this week's Recruiting Rant podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez. Thank you so much for your questions. If you have any follow-up questions, you can always reach me at The Peristyle. Stay tuned to uscfootball.com for the latest in USC athletics and recruiting.